checking out Real Talk Personal Finance. Shit's about to get real. Cashflow King with you today. And today we are starting a brand new mini series called Financial Bloopers. So hopefully everybody enjoyed the Get Your Money Right segment. We ran that pretty much for the first quarter of 2024. The very last episode ended last week on April 1st, so we did it for the whole quarter and then threw a little extra one out there for you. And as I mentioned in the last episode, hopefully you guys enjoyed that, and I wanted it to be something that people could refer back to and something that wasn't, you know, obnoxiously long. I think one quarter actually is long enough, but something if somebody wanted to start from scratch and go back, they could do so fairly easily and not feel like they were listening to the Get Your Money Right segments for, you know, forever. What we're going to start today is a mini-series on financial bloopers. Now, I have no idea how long this little mini-series is going to go. I've recently been in touch with a couple of other financial advisor friends of mine, two individuals specifically whom I've been trying to get on the show. And I basically told them, look, I think what I want to do for the podcast is to put together this mini-series of real-life clients and the dumb shit that people do. And it's not intended to make fun of people, although we probably will crack a couple jokes and have a couple of laughs. But really, it's to give all of us out there a sense of, hey, you know what? Like, maybe we aren't all that abnormal anyway, because people do crazy shit with their money. But also, just as if not more importantly than that, kind of talk through some general concepts. We can come on this show and we can talk about balance sheets and net worth and do this and do that all day long until we're blue in the face. But until we put some real life context to it, I think it really brings it out and makes it real for people. Hence, it would be very fitting to have such a show or a segment like that on the Real Talk Personal Finance podcast of all places. So I don't know how long this is going to go. I'm going to kick it off here today. We'll get into the episode here shortly. I have two real-life clients, and of course, we're never going to say anybody's real name. We will always maintain confidentiality, and again, we just want to do this for entertainment and educational purposes and kind of point out some things that really do happen out there, which I think you'll find interesting. If you do, and even if you don't, but hopefully you do, and if you do, please feel free to email your feedback to the show at realtalkpersonalfinance@gmail.com. Also, if there's anybody in your life, real talk, right? Real Talk Personal Finance, that does some crazy things with their money or has made some really off-the-wall decisions or something maybe that you found out that just seems totally bizarre, feel free to email that into the show and perhaps we can entertain it and talk about it on the podcast. I don't have an exact format for how all of these are going to go, but for today, for the two clients that I'm going to talk about, I have sort of an overall theme, if you will, in terms of the lesson learned from the bizarre things that you'll hear about, and we'll talk through that, and then we'll just kind of go from there and see how this evolves over time. Before we get into that, a couple of really quick announcements. First, we now have 43 countries listening to the show, with the newest addition being Denmark. I'm not sure if I shouted them out yet or not. If I did, you guys get a double. If I didn't, here it is right now. So thank you to everybody out in Denmark who is listening to the Real Talk Personal Finance podcast. And thank you to all of our listeners who listen to the show. We really appreciate it. Number two, we will have the Q1 e-newsletter coming out for premium subscribers. So if you are a premium subscriber, once again, thank you so much for helping to support the show and keep the podcast going. If you're not a premium subscriber, we strongly would encourage you to consider becoming one. You can just click in the show notes and there should be a link that says become a premium subscriber today. And you can read about all the benefits that you get with that, one of which is access to Cube Crusher's quarterly e-newsletter that we email out to everybody, and we also record a separate private podcast, such as a premium podcast going over the newsletter, in addition to some other premium podcasts that we do that is only available to our premium subscribers, like the ATM Investments one that we did not too long ago. We also do some surprise giveaways. We had one of our listeners who's a premium subscriber win a $25 Panera Bread e-gift card. So it's currently $3 a month. I'm debating whether or not I want to change that. That's as low as I can make it. per Buzzsprout and the way that they have their interface set up. So I try to make it as affordable as possible. And again, we don't do any ads or anything like that on the show. I think way back there was a couple spots where we had some affiliate relationships where we were just kind of testing some things out and it was just me recording a spot. But we don't actually have ads, so you don't have to worry about skipping ahead or anything like that on your podcast. And one of the ways that we're able to do that and continue to pay for the show and host the show, including all of the archives, is through our premium subscribers who are contributing to the show. So if you can afford it and you like what you're hearing and you'd like to support the show in a financial way, it's currently $3 a month. So feel free to go ahead and check us out. All right. Without further ado, we're going to get into the financial bloopers, the very first one. And as I mentioned, I'm going to talk about two different clients, and in both cases are husband and wife. And I will say I work with different types of clients. This is a US-based show, so this is here in the United States, obviously. We primarily focus on retirement planning. Sometimes clients come to us from day one. Oftentimes they come to us from maybe somewhere else, and they may have made other financial decisions in their life before coming on board. And then also we have people, like you'll hear about today, that may have been with us for a period of time, but clients have a funny way of not always telling you everything. And sometimes things come out when you least expect it. And that's what we're going to get into today. So, first example, this is a couple, married couple. They are in their mid to late 50s. So, one of them is 55, the other one is age 57. They have a pretty solid overall income. The client that's 57 earns roughly $300,000 a year. The client that earns, that is age 55 earns approximately $150,000 a year for a total combined household income of about $450,000. Now, some of you are going to listen to this and say, well, fuck this show, right? Like, I only make 30 grand a year, or I make 3 million a year, or whatever, right? And that's fine. All of this is, you know, going to be relative. And as you'll soon find out and hear through some of these, just because some of the numbers sound big, like the income, and we'll get into the net worth here in a minute, doesn't necessarily mean that these people are automatically and always making the most optimized decisions. So for example, you can have a client that earns significantly less with a much lower net worth that is actually in a better long-term financial position than somebody else who is earning more, has a higher net worth, but makes some bonehead moves, right? And so that's what this financial bloopers miniseries is here to kind of take a look at. So again, ages 55 and 57, combined income, $450,000. They have a total of just north of $4 million in assets, and they have approximately, we'll call it just over $350,000 of liabilities, and you'll be surprised to hear what some of those liabilities are as we continue through. That puts their net worth at roughly $3.7 million. And if we take a look at the balance sheet here and we go through first the asset section, I won't go through in excruciating detail, but there's a couple things that stand out. One of them is that there is just south of, not quite, but almost $3 million of that $4 million in assets is actually in real estate. All right. We got about a primary residence to the tune of about $600,000 of it. All right. So that brings you down to about 2.25 that is going to be comprised of a second home and a bunch of land. And again, to try to maintain confidentiality, I'm not going to get into excruciating detail on all of that. I will sum it up and say that there are some additional expenses, as we'll see, that go into maintaining and keeping up with that second home as well as that acreage that they have. So that's where, again, just under $3 million of it is. If we look at investable assets, we have combined between the two individuals approximately $1 million in retirement plans. That spread out between, again, both of the clients. That spread fairly evenly. One of them's got about $550,000. The other one's got about $450,000, give or take a little bit. So that brings us to about a $1 million balance in our retirement plans. And then there's some additional sort of personal property. There's some other collectibles and some antiques and some different things like that in there that it's about, you know, six figures or so in that area, a little north of that, which rounds out and makes up the almost $4.1 million in assets that we have. Now, As far as the liability side, so this is something that, you know, for the longest time, I didn't know about really any of this. And that's another thing too, just shout out and something to mention to anybody that's in the financial services space out there. One of the things that we started doing with clients, and every firm is a little bit different, is we do sort of what we call a net worth snapshot, kind of like what we did on the Get Your Money Right segment with you guys, where we talk about, okay, how do we build out our balance sheet? How do we take a look at what our assets are? How do we take a look at our liabilities and things along those lines and ultimately come up with a net worth? But really taking a look at the liability side of the balance sheet, because that's something that not a lot of people like to talk about. And sometimes advisors really don't want to talk about because, quite frankly, depending on the type of firm that you're working with, a lot of times the advisor or financial professional that you're working with may only be interested in, you know, for example, your retirement balances, because typically they are going to earn some sort of fee or commission, or depending on how they're structured, some sort of compensation tied to the assets typically that they manage for you. Now, every firm's different. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. Yes, there's fee only, and yes, there's hourly planning engagements and things like that, project-based. We're gonna leave that alone for now. The point is, sometimes people don't want to talk about the liability side. And quite frankly, I think a lot of times, especially for clients like this, where on paper so far, they seem like they're fairly financially successful, especially for your, you know, average, everyday, middle America type of couple, they're embarrassed by some of the shit that they have going on. And so again, this isn't to like point the finger and make fun of them, but this is like real life shit that actually happens, okay? So if we get into the liability side, we have a HELOC, a home equity line of credit, that has a variable rate of right around 13%, where they have a balance on that, okay? They also had some credit card debt, which I didn't know about until this point, and they were paying at one time, believe this or not, 29.99% interest. They were able to consolidate that. They didn't consult with me on this. They just did a lot of this sort of either before we started working together or it just came out, kind of the skeletons in the closet after the fact. They were able to consolidate that on a shorter term loan at 10%. They took out a personal loan for that portion. They had an HVAC that went out. So they have an HVAC loan at almost 10%. They have a car loan. A lot of people have auto loans. That's just north of 7%. They got a home mortgage, is probably the largest portion of the overall liabilities, which is in the mid to high 3% range. No big deal there. They had some other stuff that they bought, some equipment and such for the land, which is on a very, very low, like sub 2% interest rate. That's on a short-term loan, really not as much of an issue with that. They did need to do some work on the other property. They were able to get that financed at 0% over a period of 5 years. And then believe it or not, one of the two of them had a 401k loan that was outstanding for quite some time before we started working together, which is almost paid off. So what is the takeaway here? Well, first of all, the home equity line of credit at 13, the credit cards that were at 30 that are now at 10, the HVAC loan at 10, you're probably sitting there thinking to yourself, how the fuck do people that are worth almost $4 million and make almost a half a million dollars a year, how do they have these types of loans? How do they have this type of debt? And in their particular case, they do have kids that are in college and they were cash flowing that along the way. So that's obviously not cheap. But sometimes I think the biggest takeaway here is just to speak to the importance of liquidity, because they did not have a very large cash position. And we may have talked about this at other points on the show where I think a lot of folks, myself included at one time, are guilty of just shoveling as much money as possible into retirement plans for the future, which, don't get me wrong, that's important, but they don't really focus enough on the ifs, ands, or, you know, whatever can come their way when life happens to them today. And the last thing you want to do is short yourself from a liquidity standpoint, have all your money tied up, and then be forced to, you know, like one of these clients had to do, take a 401k loan or be forced into some of these other double-digit interest loans, getting into credit card debt. That's just not a game that you want to play, especially at this level. So I think most people, including them, would be willing to trade away and say, you know what, if we had a couple $100,000 less in retirement assets, but we had, you know, an extra 100 grand or something, 50 grand or whatever the number is in the bank or credit union that's liquid, a lot of people would make that trade. Now, I understand that that's not a nice trade in absolute dollar terms, right? If I'm going to take 200 grand off a retirement account and put 50 grand in the bank, you'd probably rather have the 200 grand in the retirement account. That's not what I'm saying. But the point being that you want to make sure as you're building out your balance sheet, as you're building up your asset column, you want to make sure you have some cash and some liquidity so that when things do surface, you're not forced to get yourself in a position like this. Now, fortunately for them, there are some things that they're cleaning up, including some of the liabilities that we mentioned at these higher interest rates. There are some additional expenses that are going to be in place that we kind of timeline this out anywhere from 3 to 10 years from now. But when you look at sort of longer term baseline living expenses, in their particular case, they really don't need that much money to live on. Their baseline ballpark annual living expenses, excluding healthcare, which we account for separately, and that's a whole separate conversation, is around $4,000 a month, all right? But in the meantime, right now, it's more than double that because they have about $5,200 per month additional on this sort of timeline that's going towards other things. So for example, they have a $700 a month obligation that will continue for 3 years and then that will fall off. They have an extra $2,000 a month obligation that will continue for a period of 6 years and another one for $2,500 that will continue for 10 years. So right now, total expenses are north of $9,000 a month. Again, at that income level, you might say they should be able to take care of that. But this is what happens when you don't have liquidity. And I'm sure Cube Crusher would be very quick to point out, well, cash flow king, you know, take a look at what happens when you have, you know, 75% of your asset base in real estate. Again, for these particular clients, they are not investing in rentals or income producing real estate. It is a second property that has some land, and unfortunately, it's sort of a cash flow negative proposition to maintain it and upkeep it and all those sorts of things that come along with that. So it's not exactly an apples to apples comparison. But once again, I think the takeaway from this first couple is you want to make sure you have liquidity, because even if you have a high net worth and even if you have a high income, shit like this can happen and you can find yourself, and again, they'll be cleaning this up pretty much in no time, but it's still inconvenient and just, I would want to pull my hair out personally if I was making combined $450,000 a year, I was worth $4 million and I had a credit card at almost 30% at one time. That just doesn't seem to add up for me, right? And so again, this is something that they were probably very embarrassed about and not very forthcoming about until we got into the exercise of looking at the overall net worth and taking a look at both sides, not just the asset column, but also the liability column of the balance sheet. So that's my first example for you guys. Real life shit here. So the lesson learned there would be the importance of liquidity. I'm not going to get into too much detail, but in their particular case, you know, they are looking to retire in their mid-60s, and based on their other income streams and all the other projections that we ran, they will end up being in fine shape by the time that rolls around. But they, in the meantime, there's sort of a cash crunch that's going on right now. And once again, you know, for the listeners, you don't want to find yourself in that position. So I would make an argument, as I said, just at the beginning of the show, that you could have somebody with a significantly lower net worth and significantly less income that could potentially be in a better financial position, at least in the shorter term, based on what they have going on. So again, the lesson is stack some cash so you don't get fucked on high interest rate debt. All right. Second example, and I don't know how many we're going to do every show. Just depends on what comes up, what's going on, how long we want the shows to be, who's doing them. I think I started to talk about a couple of my advisor buddies. One of them, we're supposed to record at the end of this coming week. I don't know if that's actually going to happen. Hopefully it does. And you'll be able to hear from him and some stories he has about his clients. And if for some reason he's not able to come on the show, again, I might pull some different stories. These aren't going to be all my clients. They're going to be some of, you know, some other people's clients, and hopefully we can get them on the show. There might be some listeners that write in about, hey, my aunt did this, or my sister did that, or my brother-in-law did this, or whatever. And, you know, we can kind of take a look at some of those and maybe entertain those on the show as well. All right. So here is the second sort of, don't want to say case study, but the second real life client here, also a couple. They're also in their 50s, but they're in their early 50s. One of them's 50, the other one's age 52. And their combined net worth is just south of 700. It's just over between $650,000 and $700,000 in net worth. Retirement-wise, they have, let's see here, they got about $700,000 between the two of them. So husband's got about $450,000. Wife picks up the difference at about $250,000. They got a little bit in HSA. They have some, one of my least favorite types of insurance for most people, some whole life that no, we didn't sell them. And that's a whole separate conversation that we're trying to take a look at for them and hopefully get that unwound. And on the liability side, really, they have about $33,000 in liabilities. So again, if you take, you know, roughly, what's that, 690 and change on the asset column, 33,000 on the liability side, you end up with about $657,000 for their net worth. Now, they did something that I don't really understand why or how they did this. Certainly not something that came from a recommendation from us, but they decided, for whatever reason, that it would be a good idea to go ahead and pay off the remaining approximately $30,000 on their primary mortgage. And the mortgage that they had was roughly about a 3% interest rate. So, you know, they've whittled it down over time. They barely had anything left that they owed. It was a super low interest rate. The majority of those payments that are P&I, principal and interest, is going to be going towards the principal at this point in the game due to the amortization schedule. But yet, for whatever reason, they thought it was a good idea to go ahead and pay that off. There's this obsession out there with a lot of people that want to have their mortgage paid off. And that's kind of a separate conversation. Those of you that have listened to the show for a while think know where I stand on that personally, but that's a whole separate thing. But a lot of people are just obsessed with paying off their mortgage. And if that's the last and final remaining debt that somebody has and they understand the math behind it, and from an emotional standpoint, that's still what they want to do, that's fine. But in this case, they basically replaced it with about $33,000 of credit card debt. And they don't, again, from a liquidity standpoint, they don't really have the liquidity. They got most of their money, pretty much all of their money, tied up in retirement accounts. The wife will have a pension, which is pretty strong, and relative to their expenses, which are extremely low, again, longer term, they're going to be fine. But why the hell would you trade a $30,000 mortgage at 3% for just north of that in credit cards that are in the double digits? It doesn't make any sense to me. So they did that, and now they charged up a bunch of money. They took the money that they had, they paid off the mortgage, and now they have no cash, and they've racked up a bunch of money on fucking credit cards, and now they got $33,000 on credit cards at double-digit interest rates, and the solution, the husband, wants to take out another 401k loan to pay that off, and that's a whole separate conversation. I don't want to get too far in the weeds with this, and again, for confidentiality, I got to be careful how much information I disclose here, but the bottom line is people do crazy things, and you would think, like, why in the world would you pay off a mortgage and then basically get stuck in a credit card debt? Like, obviously, you're going to pay way more in interest on a credit card than you're going to pay on your primary residence mortgage. Doesn't make any sense to me. Not something that they talked to us about before they did it. It was something we found out about after the fact. And in this particular case, the husband has a tendency to do whatever the hell he wants and doesn't really matter what the wife says or thinks. And that's a whole separate podcast on relationships and we won't go there. But definitely not something that the cash flow king would have given him the green light on. So now they're in a situation where they're going to have to try to dig out of that. Like I said, fortunately, their expenses are extremely low, like very, very, very low, sub $3,000 a month. And you would think, how in the world are you in that much credit card debt if that was the case? And again, for a lot of people, it seems to happen with clients sometimes in their 50s for some reason, but there's usually a lot going on. You got kids in school in some cases, you got home remodels projects that people are wanting to do. And then people just start freaking out and doing all kinds of crazy shit. And then sometimes, you know, you end up with situations like this where it's like, what the hell were you thinking? But in any case, like I said, longer term, they'll be just fine. They are planning to retire in one of their cases in their mid-50s. And then for the other spouse in their mid-60s, the one retiring a little bit sooner, like I said, will have a pretty strong pension. And they'll have some time to get back on track. But I just couldn't believe it when I was told that because it just completely blew my mind. And this is another financial fucking blooper. This is real shit that people do that either they never tell their financial advisor, or they never ask beforehand about it, or they just do it, or they do it and try to sweep it under the rug or hide it or whatever because they're embarrassed, or sometimes they just don't know. So the takeaway here for this second one is, from a liability management standpoint, again, going back to looking at both sides of the balance sheet, taking a look at the liability side of the balance sheet, and really having an understanding of what it means to have mortgage debt, what it means to have credit card debt. What does that look like? And if you were to make a decision, how does that affect the rest of your financial picture? Just because you pay off a debt in full, completely at 100%, if you take all your available resources to do that and you leave yourself with nothing, and you still need to live, and again, life happens and expenses surface, you're not leaving yourself a lot of options. So just something to think about. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed the very first Financial Bloopers episode. Feel free to write into the show with any feedback, realtalkpersonalfinance@gmail.com. We will see you in the next episode.
Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.